are in a series called No Place Like Home. And what we've been saying over the last few weeks, every one of us has been greatly affected by the homes we've been raised in. Some of us, that's been very positive. Some of us, it's been negative. But you and I have been affected by our home life and how we've been raised. So we've been asking this question: what would it be like if you and I did home God's way? What if we did family God's way? What would happen to our spouses? What would happen to our children? What would happen in the context of our homes if we simply did family the way God designed it to happen? So we've been asking that question and trying to answer it over the last few weeks. And whether you're a family of one, or you're a family with young kids, or empty nesters, we just ask that you would put this into your context and apply it. Every week, we've walked through a room of the house to drive home the point we're making. Last week, a kid after service said, "You know what? I think we should talk about the bathroom. Because when we ask Jesus to forgive us, he flushes our sins away." So that was a good idea. We actually were supposed to have the bathroom this week, but powers that be said we do not want a toilet right there. So, funny thing is, though, even Christians I know that are kind of anti-technology, they've always thanked God for that. Okay. But today we're going to be talking about the bedroom. And the prayer is, when you go home and walk through your bedroom, you will remember the lessons of this room. Joni and I were talking through this message earlier this week, and we boiled it down to two main things we could talk about regarding the bedroom, and she was adamant that I choose the one over the other. So today, we are talking about sleep. Our bedroom is a sanctuary. Our bedroom is a haven of rest. Life becomes calm in the bedroom. And so here's my hope. When you walk through your bedroom, you'll remember that God's heart and intent for your family is that family would provide a place for each other that is safe and secure, but most importantly, a place where we can recharge and I can get rest in my life. That is the hope of God for our families. Now, for many of us, this is not the way it works. Our families are constantly on the go. And one way that this really hit home to me is right before Easter, our church, we delivered Easter candy and Easter books to all the kids in the community, families from the church. And so I said, "Okay, girls, this is going to be fun. We're going to do this as a family. What is going to be the best time of the week that we know people will be home, that we could visit them?" I thought, well, how about Thursday between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m.? So that's not the weekend. That's going to be a good time. People are going to be home. None of you were home. It was deeply disappointing. And so I take from that, you are on the go. You are really, really busy. And so we're going to look at a story in the Gospel of Luke. We're going to look at a story of a lady who thought rest was a luxury, that it's something you do when everything else gets done. It's something you put off until it's convenient. And in the process of doing this, she's going to create some real heartache in her life. So it's Luke chapter 10, starting with verse 38. This is the story of Mary and Martha, and many of you will be familiar with this. Some of you, this will be new. Verse 38 says, "As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village." And so the context, Jesus is traveling with his disciples. They get to a village. It doesn't look like this was planned. And Jesus says, this looks like a good place to stop. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. So apparently they get there. Jesus says, let's call it a day. Hey guys, why don't you go check out with Martha if we can stay at her house? It's unexpected. So ladies, you know what that means. Here's Jesus and the disciples showing up unannounced. It says a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." So let me ask you a question. Does this story bother anyone but me? I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not sure I like Jesus' answer, because I'm a Martha. I'm one of those people that has a list of things that need to get done. And these are important things. And I'm constantly working to get that next check mark on the list. This is what success is. And the reality is, as I cross off that next thing, as I get that task accomplished, almost immediately I move on. Not much celebration or time for rest. I just move on to the next thing. I am a Martha. Any Marthas in the house? Now, I want to say this to the guys. This is us too. This isn't just the ladies. This is not time to tune out because we're talking about Martha. We all suffer from get-it-done-itis, right? From the disease of doing. I think women come to this because they live in a world of expectation. The expectation to be the perfect mom, the perfect wife, the perfect daughter, the perfect sister. And the next thing you know, that list gets huge. Especially around the holidays, especially around Christmas. You've got to take that new family picture. You've got to order the cards. You've got to bake that one cookie that everyone loves and expects, right? The Christmas list goes on and on. But we as men, we get there too. There are workaholics amongst us because so much of a man's worth is tied up in accomplishment. And so men, we're constantly saying, if I can just climb the next hill, if I can do the next thing, then who I am will be more established and understood. And so I guarantee you there are just as many men here that are Marthas as there are women. And we have a lot of Marthas in the room. Here's what you got to get. In this story, this simple story about Martha reveals a lot about her life that is really, really desperately in trouble. A lot about what her family life is like. And so here is what Martha doesn't understand in this moment. Like you and I, we are triune beings, that there are essentially three parts to us. We are created by God with a body, a physical shell that we live in. It's part of who we are. Then we have a soul. And in secular thought, this is often referred to as intellect or emotions. We have a soulish part of us that relates with other people. And then we have a spirit. There's the spiritual side of us, the part that connects with God. Three dimensions to every one of our lives. And in this short story, Martha, in order to get done what needs to get done, she is going to blow up all three of these worlds. And so I want to look at this story once again. Verse 38 says, "As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him." Now watch, because she's about to blow up the physical part. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. And so you understand this. We've all been here. Jesus shows up unexpected. All of a sudden, I'm not cooking for two, I'm cooking for 22. And I guarantee you there was dirt somewhere in that house. And immediately she drives into all that needs to be done. Her list just grew big time. And she is running around like a chicken with her head cut off, trying to check these boxes off. And the reality is, many of us live as Marthas. We live enslaved to the list. Our lives look a little bit like that circus character who's spinning all the different plates. And it's really fun to watch, but it's really miserable to live that out. And the reality is that we're spinning so many plates, trying to keep them going, that your day has to go perfect in order for all the plates to stay up. Because the moment you hit an extra red light, the moment your kids do not cooperate and do not get out of bed, the moment that your spouse comes home late from work or there's an extra meeting, you do any of these things and you've just knocked over my plates. You've just blown me up. And the moment that someone knocks your plates, you're like, oh, great. Can't you see? Can't you see I'm busy? And we respond with anger to plate pushers. I was thinking Easter is a fairly busy time here around the church, and so it was a Sunday night. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? And so it's a Sunday night. It's been a long day. The musical's been happening, and we've been doing the Daniel fast on top of this, so we're just eating vegetables. And for a guy who doesn't like vegetables, who thinks it's part of the fall, it was difficult. So I'm starving at the end of Sunday. What am I going to eat? And they just opened up a new restaurant about a mile south of here. So I'm like, I'm just going to pull in here and get some vegan chili. That sounds good. Vegetarian chili. So I get my little cup of chili. I pull out. I drive down the road. And my tire gauge comes on. So I pull over, look, and there is a nail in the side of my tire. Because, of course, that's the only place that nails like to go, is in the side. Thanks a lot, God. This is the last thing I needed. And so at that moment, a thought came to my mind that probably wasn't very pastoral. I thought, you know what, those no-good-for-nothing construction guys, could they not sweep the parking lot before opening the business? What if I were to go there tomorrow morning and just lay some nails right where those guys park? They're still working there. Here's what you need to know. That night, I was prayed up. I was Bibled up. I didn't need to pray another prayer. I didn't need to read another chapter in my devotions. If I would have asked Jesus, hey, he would have said, same thing as he said to Martha, you are worried, you are upset. One thing is needed, and that you need to set some plates down. And so Martha, she is running around, she is distracted. It's the actual sign of physically being overloaded. But now her soul is going to get affected. Her emotions, her relationships, verse 39, says she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Now, don't let this slip past you. Jesus is in the living room. He's teaching Mary, but she's not the only one in that room. We know at least the disciples are there, and chances are if Jesus comes to town, neighbors are coming over as well. And so Martha, she's in the other room. She's trying to get stuff done. Here's Mary. She's sitting at the feet of Jesus. She's in a crowd. And isn't it interesting? Martha doesn't come to Mary quietly and say, hey, could you give me a hand here in the kitchen? Not Martha. At this time now, she is hot and bothered. She is ticked out of her mind. And so she marches into that room and announces, Jesus, would you please tell this no good, crummy sister of mine to get in the kitchen now? Please. And here's what's going on in Martha's heart. She's saying, look, I get it. The disciples are men. They don't get it. But you're my sister. You know we weren't planning on having all these guests. Get up. You're blowing it. Don't you realize what is important right now? Don't you understand the agenda? Don't you understand what the list looks like? Get up. Come help me. And Martha, she is absolutely willing to blow someone else up because they are not meeting her expectations. What do you think that home was going to look like when Jesus and his disciples left? I'm picturing a major catfight. So here's the problem. When you and I, who are Marthas, when we have pretty clear set agendas for our lives, see, if you're a Martha, you already know how things are supposed to turn out. You've already planned it out. If you've not written it down physically, then you've written it down in your heart. This is what my sister better do. This is what my spouse better do. This is what my kids better do. And you know what? You probably have a list for God, too. You have an agenda. And far be it, let someone else in the house has a different agenda than you. I mean, how could they be so dumb? How could they be so off base to not understand your agenda is the agenda? And so it goes something like this. He says, I need more overtime. She says, we need family time. She says, I need some affection. He says, how about some sex? She says, I need some approval and affirmation. He says, well, let's go to the gym. And I'm just telling you, as long as you and I, we have our own written agenda, and as long as we try to impose that agenda on the rest of the people in our home, there's really only two outcomes that can come out of that moment. Either someone has to lay down and say, okay, you win, I lose, I'll be the doormat, or we fight. And we fight for agenda supremacy. And I can tell you that neither of those homes knows peace, and neither of those homes know rest. And so if that is happening, what do you do about that? There's this remarkable passage in Matthew 11:28. Where Jesus speaks to this. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Now, wouldn't that be amazing if that were true? Listen to what Jesus says the solution is. Verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. What are we to learn? Learn what my priorities are. Learn what my values for your family are. Learn what my goals are for your kids. Take my agenda, not your agenda. See, it's not his agenda, her agenda, the kids' agenda. Jesus says, take my agenda to your home. And Jesus says, you can learn from me. Going on, he says, for I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so let me ask you a question. If you sit here today as Martha, you sit here and your yoke is hard and your burden is heavy. If you're feeling the weight and your knees are wobbling, if you say, you know what, I don't know how much longer I can keep up this pace, let me ask you then, whose yoke are you carrying? Because it's not Jesus. Because he said, if you lay down your agenda, if you lay down your expectations, if you lay home the perfect home based on Martha, and if you'll instead take my yoke, it's light. And it's easy, and it has peace, and it has rest for your home. Now the third area. Not only does Martha suffer physically because she has too much on her plate, not only is she struggling relationally and in her soul because she's fighting people over her agenda. But the final piece is in Luke 10:39. It says, she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. And so let's be honest and transparent. All of us who are Marthas in the room, when you and I, we get checking off our list, when life gets busy, when life gets overwhelming, guess what we put on hold? Guess what we put on the when the list gets smaller section? It's our spiritual lives, isn't it? Don't we say, you know what? There is just so much chaos in my life. My life is unmanageable right now. So I'll get back to church when it's less insane. I'll get back to reading my Bible or doing devotions when I'm not so upside down. I mean, can you imagine trying to add that to my day? No way. And spirituality, it feels a little bit like going to the gym. You know, when we do these things, it feels good and we're glad that we did them, and yet you've got to go back and do it all over again. And it's not just something that we check off the list. So we say, when life gets back to normal, then I will worry about my spiritual life. Can I suggest to you that if you wait for more time in your life to worry about your spiritual life, you will be waiting for the rest of your life. And if you're a Martha right now, you're thinking, oh, great. He's going to add something next to my list. Church and Bible reading and prayer. Let me suggest this. The very moments that you sit at the feet of Jesus, it's moments like this right now where you're in God's presence in his house, the moments I'm at home reading my Bible or praying, those moments actually make the burden lighter. Those actually help me navigate the rest of my list. It makes life better. It makes the burden not so heavy. So let me explain. If I were to ask for two volunteers, two people of equal competence, and I gave you both the same tools, and I handed each of you a box, it's a box with 500 pieces to assemble a 10-speed bike. So I give both of you same tools, same pieces, same abilities, but one of you I give the instructions, and the other person I say, you know what, you just figure it out. Just wing it. Which of those two is going to finish first? Equal ability, equal tools. The one who has the instructions. He'll get it done and he'll move on. The Bible is the instructions. Times with God are the instructions in a world that is confusing and has all sorts of little bolts and pieces that we're not sure how they connect. It's the instructions. When you and I take the time to sit at the feet of Jesus, it actually helps me navigate the rest of my life. That moment of rest, that moment of restoration actually makes my life more manageable. If you're a Martha, you're thinking now, okay, so how can I fit this in? I think I've got a Bible app on my phone, so I'll play that while I'm driving to work tomorrow. And I'm not asking you to add something that probably wasn't already on your list. I'm just saying that if you find yourself this morning a Martha, you have permission to add a little bit of Mary to your life. To take a few of those plates that are spinning, to lay them down, because Martha, you're worried about many things. Why don't you lay a few of those down? You have permission to lay down your agenda, your expectations, your rules, lay them down at the feet of Jesus and trade them for a yoke that is far lighter. The expectations of Jesus. You have permission this morning to spend time at the feet of Jesus, getting your soul recharged, because you and I are better when we spend time at the feet of Jesus. And so the bedroom is a reminder that our homes and our families ought to be the place where we rest and recharge our body, our soul, and our spirit. There ought to be time in our homes where we can just talk with one another or enjoy a meal around a table, pray with one another, put your feet up and just say, God, thank you for the blessings that you put in my life. Now, some of us, we've reached the point this morning where we're not enjoying anything because we're trying to do everything. Our relationship with God and with others is suffering because there's so little spare room in our schedules. So where do we start? How do we make our homes that place of rest and rejuvenation once again? I want to give you three suggestions. Three suggestions to make your home a place of rest. The first one is this: find your chair. What is your favorite chair in your home? One of the things that I received when I married Joni is an assortment of Lazy Boy recliners. They're all between 20 and 40 years old, different shades and colors. One of those Lazy Boys is my chair. That chair is holy ground. So, the day starts, I go to the Keurig, and then I go to the Lazy Boy. I open up my Bible app, and it's just me and Jesus. And so I would encourage you to find your favorite chair in the house and make that a place where you and Jesus meet on a daily basis. It will become the place where he lightens your load and he gives you the instructions for that day. Find your chair. My second piece of advice is you need to practice saying no. Look for opportunities to build your no muscle. You might have a fear of telling people no, but you have to realize you're always saying no to something or someone. You're either consciously saying no to the things that don't matter, or you will accidentally say no to the things that do matter. And if you're saying yes to everyone else all the time, you are saying no to having any space or margin in your life. Plus, saying no doesn't mean you have to be a jerk. You can look for ways to say no while being really, really nice. So if you're going to add something to your schedule, ask then, what will we take away from my schedule? You may be Superwoman or Superman, but at some point, you have a limit that you'll bump up against. You get that sometimes we have a hard time saying no because it's really about ego. You know, it just feels good that thing's going to fall apart if we walk away. It's deeply flattering. So, okay, I guess I will. Life is far more enjoyable and peaceful when you are not living right at your limit. And in order to do that, you'll need to practice saying no to good things and to good people. And when you're intentional about what you're taking on and what you leave on the side, here is what you are doing. You're making your schedule based on who you want to become and not based on what needs to be done. And I think that could be freeing for some people here today. That as you develop the schedule for your life and for your family, that it should be less about what needs to be done and more about who you want to become. Practice saying no. And here's the last piece of advice, and this is fairly targeted for a group of people. Strive for balance in ministry. The story of Mary and Martha shows us it's more than possible to serve Jesus while missing out on spending time with Jesus. And so if you're one of the many faithful servants here at Oak Creek, this is what I want to say first. Thank you. Thank you. Because Jesus sees it, and he appreciates it, and I and many others see it, and we appreciate it. And in order for you to be healthy and replenished, there needs to be a balance between serving and being in service. Time where you get to be at the altar. And so our mission as a church is not to recruit you so that things get done. Our mission as a church is to help you discover and become who God created you to be. And part of that is serving and being served, and it's a balance. And so if you, in your serving role, if you're not regularly able to be a part of a service and have time where God can touch you here at this altar, would you please talk to your ministry leader or a pastor? Don't just burn out. Don't just disappear. Let's talk. Let's have a two-way conversation and find out what is the best balance for you so you can discover and become who God created you to be.